Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, September 6th, 2023. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Idaho Superintendent of Public Instruction Debbie Critchfield submits 2024 budget request asking for a 4% increase for public schools. Moscow Farmers Market officials say the market has more vendor applicants than it has room for, and Robert Amon, also known as Ramon, involved in the Northern Idaho Earth First campaign to save the Cove Mallard roadless area, has died. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Reports. And you're tuned to KRFP Moscow Pullman, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Robert Amon, better known as Ramon, has died at the age of 86. Ramon was a major figure in the Earth First campaign to save the Cove Mallard roadless area in central Idaho from a multiple clear-cut logging project in the 1990s. He purchased a Forest Service inholding south of Dixie, which Earth First activists used as a base camp for logging road blockades and tree sits to slow logging until judges recognized violations of environmental laws on the part of the Forest Service timber sale planners. Ramon reportedly died Saturday. The activists were also successful in stopping most of the logging in the nearby biodiverse Otter Wing timber sale southeast of Grangeville during the 1990s until the Clinton administration's roadless rules kicked in. The Otter Wing included a rare coastal disjunct ecosystem. One of Ramon's friends, Don Kimball, wrote on Facebook, "Longtime friend, mentor, and forest activist Robert Ramon Amon has died at age 86. A tireless champion for the forests, we'll miss his tanned, toothy smile and tall tales about the trees he helped save from the saw. This Equitable Insurance executive turned enviro inspired many to heed the call to save the last of America's ancient forests, and not only talked the talk but walked the walk, buying an old school bus with Billy Packer, a reformed commercial fisher. They formed the Ancient Forest Bus Brigade from a collection of castaways, including Catfish, an ex-con, Cindy, a recovering heroin addict, Russell, the runaway, and Bones, an old hound dog. Together, they traveled the West, supporting forest activists in California, Oregon, and Idaho. Eyed with suspicion by the locals for his ability to speak and write about the true costs of the boom and bust cycles in communities whose economies depended on the mills, he was also often threatened and vilified by them. Indeed, when he was once called a cult leader in an Idaho newspaper, Earth First hero, the late Judy Berry, nicknamed him the Brunch Ramonian Leader, in a tongue-in-cheek comparison to David Koresh and his Branch Davidians. Followers in Waco, who were burned out by jack-booted thugs of the FBI and ATF in 1993. That same year, the Cove Mallard Coalition in Dixie, Idaho, which was camped on Ramon's land trying to save the last largest roadless area in the lower 48, was raided by federal marshals with automatic weapons. Fortunately, there was no violence that day. For more than a decade, Ramon and the Ancient Forest Bus Brigade roamed the West supporting actions against extractive industries. Once, when the Havasupai Nation's water supply was threatened with a uranium mine proposal, Ramon took members of the tribe, some who had never ventured out of the Supai Canyon, to Las Vegas for a Department of Energy hearing on the mine. As the tribal members gazed in amazement at the strange sights of Glitter Gulch, Ramon asked the last elder off the bus if they were missing anything. The tribal elder replied, "Yes, missing Supai. We'll all miss Ramon, R.I.P. pal." That was from a Facebook post by Don Kimball. During today's Wild Clearwater Country radio show on KRFP, host Cass Davis spoke with Brett Klub of Olympia, who worked with Ramon on the Cove Mallard Earth First campaign in central Idaho.
Excuse me. You know, the thing about the Cove Mallard campaign and, you know, Ramon being a critical leadership there is that it really energized that part of Idaho's activist community. And, you know, you talk about fighting the megalodes and whatever other issues come up around there. And people cut their teeth on Cove Mallard. And some of them, you know, like there you got your guy Zach, who stuck it out, you know, became a lawyer and is still working to help. So I think that campaign was inspirational to thousands of people who went on to do more and bigger.
Well, I had only been involved in like Central American politics and, you know, bringing, you know, past CIA people to campus and stuff, people to tell us what covert wars were doing to the third world. And that had been my only involvement in activism. And then I met the guys who got arrested for mooning federal officers, and that inspired me to go up to Cove Mallard and you know, I rounded up $5 from individuals in Moscow until I had 100 donations of $5, took $500 up there. And then Ramon wasn't there, but he looked me up and found me and offered me a breakfast and told me to put my body where my money was and get involved.
And see, that was his way. Like he was like your granddad, right?
Right.
Or your uncle.
Uncle.
And he
yeah.
was like, and he was like, you know, just like, oh, let's share some breakfast, and you know, we'll talk about this, and then he just talked you into it.
That was Brett Klub speaking with Wild Clearwater Country Show substitute host Cass Davis today on KRFP. Moscow Saturday Farmers Market Commission Chair Jamie Hill says the market is overflowing with vendors this year and the market has to turn some potential vendors away every week. Hill spoke during last night's Moscow City Council meeting.
Last year, 2022, we had 133 eligible vendors. This year, we are up to 149. One of the amazing problems, I get to say amazing, Amanda gets to say challenging, problems that we have discovered this year is that we have hit capacity for the majority of the markets. So the weekly email that normally goes out and says, hi vendors, we can't wait to see you Saturday, here's your space assignment, says now, hi vendors, can't wait to probably see you Saturday, here's your space assignment, or where are you on the wait list? We are overflowing with vendors, and it is such an exciting challenge to see, but I know that it's also probably quite the heck. So that's pretty exciting. I will say within those 149 vendors, this year we onboarded 38 new vendors total. That includes 10 that were ag, 19 that were craft, and 10 that were food. So lots and lots of new faces at market. I usually try and introduce myself to new vendors, and it's been really weird this summer because every week I feel like there's a new face that I get to go and meet and go, have I met you yet? Have I not found all of them yet? It's kind of exciting.
Hill said the market is especially over capacity for crafts vendors, for which the market has a juried selection process.
This year we had 110 inquiries of joining the market for only 45 spots within that jury process. And we ended up doing 42 vendors that were registered and juried out of those 45 spots. But obviously, we're still hitting capacity. So that's a great thing.
That was Moscow Farmers Market Commission Chair Jamie Hill speaking to the Moscow City Council last night. You're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report.
Love's Kombucha is proud to support KRFP Radio Free Moscow. Love's Kombucha is a fun, lively, fermented probiotic tea that is craft brewed right here in Moscow. For more information, visit loveskombucha.com.
Pullman police have charged a woman with attempted murder for stabbing two people on College Hill this morning. Pullman Police Department news release says they charged 29-year-old Tiffany Dennison of California with attempted second-degree murder, second-degree assault, and weapons apparently capable of producing bodily harm. Police said when they arrived, they found the woman, armed with a knife, actively assaulting another woman. She had allegedly stabbed a man and cut the woman inside a College Hill apartment. According to Pullman police, crews took the two stabbing victims to Pullman Regional Hospital. The man had critical injuries but is expected to survive, and the woman was treated for non-life-threatening injuries. Police say Dennison appeared to be experiencing a mental health crisis. She was taken to the hospital, and police say when she's released from the hospital, she's expected to be booked in the Whitman County Jail in Colfax. Two 19-year-olds, Frank Rodriguez and Robert Garcia, pled guilty to one count of felony robbery in a plea agreement in Whitman County Superior Court Friday for their involvement in a robbery on the Washington State University campus in July. The case against 21-year-old R.J. Williams, who reportedly instigated the robbery, is still ongoing. William remains in the Whitman County Jail without bond. He faces five counts of felony robbery and is scheduled to appear later this month. According to court records, Washington State University police responded to a report of a robbery at the Terrace Apartments the morning of July 1st. Court documents said five men were standing outside the apartment complex when they saw three men walking towards them. The three men came up to the five men and asked for cigarettes. The five men said no, but the other three men continued to ask. The three men then allegedly stole a guitar from one of the men and also took four of the men's phones. William allegedly struck one of the men with an open hand on the side of his head near his jaw. The three men then allegedly fled the scene, with one of the five men following them southwest of the apartment complex but lost track. Pullman police reported they saw the three men and pursued them on foot but also lost track of them. After interviewing the five men, WSU police gave one of the men a ride home, who spotted the now broken guitar in the apartment complex's parking lot. Court records show around the same time, Pullman police reported to WSU police they had apprehended Rodriguez. WSU police arrested Garcia the next day, and police arrested William August 10th. The Lewiston Tribune reports at Friday's hearing, Court Commissioner Doug Robinson sentenced Rodriguez and Garcia to 6 months in jail, 1 year probation, and $4,800 each in victim restitution. Rodriguez's and Garcia's plea deals require them to cooperate with Whitman County Prosecutor Dennis Tracy's case against William. As part of the plea agreement, four of the additional felony robbery counts against Rodriguez and Garcia were dropped. 69-year-old Bruce Spencer of Plummer died in a single-vehicle accident in Teco Monday morning. According to a Whitman County Sheriff's Office news release, officers responded to a report of a vehicle collision in Teco Monday. Officers found Spencer deceased when they arrived. The news release said officers believe Spencer was traveling eastbound at a high rate of speed and lost control of the vehicle. The release said the vehicle hit the guardrail, rolled several times, and Spencer, who was not wearing a seatbelt, was ejected. Witnesses at the scene said Spencer may have been involved in a road rage incident and may have been racing a motorcycle at the time of the collision. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention last week awarded the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare $2 million to go towards drug overdose prevention. According to a CDC news release, the money is part of the $279 million in funds the agency is giving to 49 states and the District of Columbia to expand the use of harm reduction strategies, provide access to life-saving care, and to expand data availability. The Idaho Capital Sun reports the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare will distribute the money to 7 public health districts, tribes, and public safety organizations around the state. Health Department spokesperson Greg Stahl told the news outlet in an email, the money will go towards educating healthcare providers, boosting data capacity, and supporting public safety initiatives in response to suspected drug overdoses. He said some of the money will also go to educating the public on how to respond to an overdose and the risks of illicitly manufactured fentanyl. Stahl said part of the data capacity expansion's goal is to monitor opioid overdose rates at emergency rooms throughout the state, including emergency medical service runs and deaths from overdose. According to state data, 381 Idahoans died of overdose last year, a 33% increase from 2020. Federal data shows the number of overdose deaths in Idaho have steadily increased, starting with 265 in 2019, 287 in 2020, and 354 in 2021. Idaho Governor Brad Little said at International Overdose Awareness Day in Boise last week, in just a decade, thousands of Idahoans have died of overdose. With each passing year, deaths are increasing in number, and that includes both prescription opioids and illicit drugs. In the news release, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Division of Overdose Prevention Director Grant Baldwin said, "The drug overdose crisis in the United States is a constantly evolving, unwieldy, calculating presence that is claiming the lives of our parents, children, siblings, colleagues, and friends. The CDC is committed to saving lives, and to do this, we must provide our communities with the resources they need to stay ahead of and respond to this crisis." Idaho Superintendent of Public Instruction Debbie Critchfield has turned in her 2024 budget request, which also includes a request for more money for this year for the state's 115 school districts and 78 charter schools. Next year's budget request for fiscal year 2025 comes in at $120 million in new funding, a roughly 4% increase in the public schools budget. During the last legislative session, lawmakers appropriated $2.7 billion for the K-12 budget. Critchfield is asking for an additional $92 million for the current school year to cover the transition back to the K-12 funding formula based on student attendance. Idaho has based the formula for years on average daily student attendance. As daily in-person student attendance dropped during the COVID-19 pandemic, the state adopted a new model based on student enrollment. Many educators say the new enrollment-based model is more predictable, and the daily student attendance-based formula would strip millions of dollars from the K-12 budget. The Idaho Education News reports the $92 million request could pit Critchfield against Governor Brad Little, who supports the daily student attendance-based formula. According to State Department of Education spokesperson Gideon Tolman, Critchfield's additional $92 million request for this school year does not represent new money and is money which would have gone to school districts to mostly cover salaries and benefits, but because of the shift to the attendance-based formula, the money ended up in the state budget reserve. Critchfield said the Idaho legislature and governor have made historic investments in the K-12 budget, and we want schools to have access to this appropriation. Of the $120 million budget request for the next school year, or fiscal year 2025, Critchfield is asking for $46.9 million for the career ladder, which is raises for teachers and staff salaries and benefits. Another $40 million would go to outcome-based funding, which is expected to lead to increased reading scores for K through 4th grade, math scores for K through 9th grade, and high school performance tied to college or career readiness. The request also includes $9 million for the launching of a 3-year pilot program to support 500 aspiring teachers attending colleges in the state. The governor's office requires all state department heads to submit budget requests by September 1st. The governor then submits their budget by the start of the legislative session in January, and then the legislature votes on the budget bills. In a news release, Critchfield said this K-12 budget request is a critical first step in the continuation of the efforts to update our state's 30-year school funding formula. We're taking a phased approach. Washington fire officials report all evacuation orders for the Oregon Road and Gray fires in Spokane County have been lifted. According to fire updates, the Oregon Road fire northeast of Elk, Washington is now 90% contained. Fire officials said they have determined the fire was human-caused, but it is still under investigation. Fire officials report the Gray fire near Medical Lake is now 97% contained and the fire's cause is still under investigation. Officials said they will no longer provide daily updates on the fire unless there is a major development. Less than 250 fire personnel remain at the two fires. They are performing mop-up and extinguishing hotspots. The spokesman review reports the two fires, which both started August 18th, destroyed over 350 homes and scorched more than 20,000 acres. That's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area. It'll be mostly clear tonight and tomorrow with a low tonight of 48. Make that 46, and a high of 75 tomorrow. 20% chance of showers after midnight Thursday night, partly cloudy, low 50. And mostly clear conditions Friday through Sunday with highs of 77 Friday and 83 Saturday and Sunday, lows 49 Friday night and 52 Saturday night. Currently 72 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843, or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. There you can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can also adopt a DJ, and there's a PayPal option, and there's also a Patreon button. Also on the website, you can stream KRFP or listen to archives of any show in the last 2 weeks. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Flashpoints is up next after a commentary from Planet Nancy. That'll be followed by Lockdown Mosh Pit tonight, 7:30 to 8:30, and music begins in earnest with Grateful Dead Through the Decades with Arlene, 8:30 till 10 p.m. tonight. So stay tuned for all that. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP is supported by listeners like you and by Moscow Ale House, with something for everyone in the family. You can find Moscow Ale House at 226 West 6th Street or call 208-882-BREW. That's 208-882-2739.